Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It is the IT Babble podcast, episode 171. It's the middle of September. Tony, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm a little tired for the middle of September. I should have more energy, but I think it's just adjusting to the new schedule here in Texas. And hopefully this week I'll get back in my workout routine. So maybe that'll give me the much needed energy I need.
Yeah, I felt really drained in the middle of the week for some reason. I just woke up tired and I don't know. Maybe it's because it's getting darker earlier and it's, you know, maybe that's
could
it.
Be.
Could be that. But Tony, I was playing around on eBay and I got burned. Not really burned, but I had been looking to get a rollerball mouse and I like the Logitech mice. And so I was looking at the MX Ergo, but I didn't want to pay $100, which is what they sell for. I didn't want to pay $100 for a mouse. So I was looking on eBay and I was bidding like $40 and I had lost like six or seven auctions in a row and I didn't care. I didn't think I'd ever get one, but I won one on accident. I thought somebody was going to outbid me and nobody ever did. So I got a new Logitech MX Ergo. Well, I used one, but it looks new and it's a rollerball. It's a rollerball, Tony, and you use rollerball mice.
Oh, yeah, I have this almost one exactly like this.
Yeah. And let me tell you, it takes some getting used to. sir.
It does, but I think it's way better for your hands.
It's very comfortable. It is very, very, very comfortable. And I had used a trackpad before, but the problem with the trackpad is if you do any sort of image editing, a trackpad is terrible. It's not very good at all.
Right.
So you need a mouse for that. So I've been having some wrist pain. And so I was looking for a new mouse and I got this one for $40
on eBay.
On eBay. Yep. I didn't think I $40 was kind of like, I'm not going above 40. That's it. I don't know why. And I was losing auction after auction and I thought it was kind of fun and interesting. And then I bid $40 and all of a sudden I won. And I was like, okay. I wasn't expecting to have to pay, you know, you pay for shipping as well. And so it turned out to be just over $50 for the mouse, but it was good. It's good. It is really comfortable, man. It's really comfortable.
Yeah. It looks really nice.
Yeah. It's a good one. I'll put a link in the show notes there, but it's taking some getting used to. That's, you know.
Ooh. I think these devices are a great, like, security measure. So what I do, because, you know, my office is open a lot, so even if I lock my screen, one thing I do is I have one of these, like, trackballs, and I flip it over when I walk away from the desk and I turn it off. So if anyone wanted to sit down and use my computer, what are they going to do? They're like, what is this thing? First off, they can't use it, because, like, if you ever see someone pick one of these things up and think it's a mouse, their eyes just stare down at their hand. They're like, what is going on? So they just sit there. Like, I think it'd buy you like 5 minutes of additional security at least before they figure out what's going on, you know. Plus you have their handprint done.
Yeah, there you go. But man,
yeah, they're getting more expensive because it seems like Logitech's the only person that makes them anymore. And yeah, I think the last one, this one I had, I picked it up in Bangkok at a big like wholesaler, and I think I paid about 45 or 50 for mine.
They still sell yours because yours is wired.
No, I actually
you lost that one.
Yeah.
Oh.
When I was moving in China, we were there for a few weeks before we moved into our full-time apartment, and the ball actually fell out of the thing during the move, and I never found the ball.
So, oh, I see. I'm looking on their website. There is a wireless trackball, the M570.
Yeah, so I have a wireless trackball.
So, yeah. And it sells for $60. That's $60 there. So, yeah, I am with you. I don't think there's a lot of people out there who make these anymore.
So, why didn't you get a Razer mouse, Patrick, for gaming?
I don't game on my computer.
Yeah,
game on
I my like computer. Those kids that get the Bluetooth or wireless laser mouse, and they're always actually behind.
Yeah,
because the serious gamers have a wired mouse
because it's faster response time. Yeah,
yeah, it's faster, way faster.
Yeah,
and they
so
spend so much on them.
Oh, I know. And then they light up, and oh my god, and they have their own proprietary driver. You know, it's not just
it's a mess.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
I like the Logitech. It's nice because they have it's called Logitech Options. It's a little software, and you can customize the buttons. And I mean, you can do that with Windows in the control panel, but they give you a little bit more options. It's kind of nice. But I am enjoying it. It is really comfortable, and I am slowly getting used to that trackball. So I thought I'd just sharing about my mouse. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you're on the trackball bandwagon like me.
No, I had to. I just, my wrists, they, a few years ago, it was the pain was so bad. It literally was waking me up at night. I would roll on my stomach and put my hands under the pillow, but then they'd be at a weird angle and it would just be a sharp, acute pain, and you would look at your wrist and you would expect it to be swollen but there was nothing. The wrists were fine, and it was a mess. I had to do something. So I've always been looking for a good, comfortable mouse or solution, and I like trackpads. I like them a lot, but when you're doing any sort of image editing, even basic image editing, trackpads will fail you. They are not very good. So
yep, horrible.
But anyway, on our show, we got some good things. We're going to be, Tony wants to talk about some programs that people are teaching and are still teaching, though they should be teaching. It looks like at least one of those. I have a Kahoot story, and we'll save that to the end. But our first topic here is, what's a student information system, or sometimes people call them school information systems, but SIS is usually the acronym that people use. And why should you care? Tony, why should people care about an SIS?
Because if they don't know what it is, they're going to drive me crazy. It's insane. So one of the things I have to do at this new job is evaluate their school information system, which I'm not going to go into any specifics. But I'm going around interviewing people, right? I'm asking them about their workflow and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, well, if we switch, I heard that some schools switched and they couldn't do this or that. And I'm like sitting there like, what are these people talking about? Like, do they know what I'm talking about? And one person thought the school information system was Final Sight, the website.
Oh, no, 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 no. Yeah.
And they're like,
no.
And this is why, because like a lot of things that are complicated, if you want to get teachers or students or parents into a service that your school information system might host, like, for example, PowerSchool has a parent portal.
Yep.
You don't give them the URL. You put the link on the school's website, right?
Yes. Yep.
And when they go to the parent portal, it's been customized so it matches the school colors and it has the logo.
That is correct.
So they're like, if you're like, oh, I think we should reduce our investment, for example, in Final Sight, and put a little bit more money in the modules for the student information system. They don't understand that. And they're like, oh, if you do that, if you turn Final Sight off, which is not what I said, if you turn Final Sight off, you're not going to. Yeah, I know a school that did that, and then they couldn't even look up any names.
Oh, wow.
So I just want to be clear, most teachers actually have very limited contact with the student information system. You usually have a gradebook interface,
yep,
or some kind of portal that you use online. And it might seem like it does a lot, but in terms of the entire package, it's probably 20%, 25%. Like, for example, a lot of people think ManageBack is a student information system, and it's not.
No. People try to use it as one, though.
Right.
I've heard of schools trying to do that, but
It is more of a learning management system.
Yes.
Connected to the IB program and the way the IB program works. And it also helps you manage your casts. But they actually have another product that you buy if you want to go full student information system that connects with ManageBack and shares data with it. Mm-hmm. And you would never see that product as a teacher.
Yeah.
You might see in your teacher portal or in ManageBack, you might start to see reports show up like in your menu, or you might start seeing some extra features like, oh, you know, here's some extra features. That stuff is coming from the student information system. It's being built in there and shared back to the teachers or the parents. Yeah. And this is where this all gets really confusing. So I just wanted to like think about what a student information system would let you do. If that's what you're using, you would know. So like one main characteristic is that you can run searches on multiple fields of data.
Yes.
So if you can't go into whatever you're using and say, show me all the kids who were born after this date who are boys and who have an F, if you can't run a compound search, you're not in a student information system. That is number one. There are a few teacher and parent systems, I guess, out there that might allow that, but most of those aren't really searches. The data is all there, and it's just filters. I'm talking about searching, like a box that you have to type, sometimes a formula in, like a database formula.
Yes.
If you don't have the ability to do that, to search multiple types of data and kind of group kids in different ways or group parents in different ways, then you're not using a student information system. So you need to take a step back and ask yourself, did I understand the question? And so I'm going to be a little bit more detailed in the way, or not more detailed. I'm going to do things a little bit differently. So starting next week, when I talk to people about their workflow, I'm not going to mention any names of any modules or any products. I'm just going to say things like, so when you do this, do you find it easy? And they're either going to be like, I can't do that. I don't know how to do it. I do it and I like it, or I do it and I don't like it. So I'm just going to streamline my process. But I was just a little shocked. You know, I was always aware that, especially with parents, they just, you build all these portals, so it all feels very streamlined. But I think it is kind of important for teacher orientation and just training your staff to give them a 10 or 15 minute overview, make a flow chart or some kind of system diagram and just say, hey, this is how all of our stuff is connected.
Yeah.
And just let them know how the information flows. Maybe 20 or 30% of your staff are going to retain that. So that way, when there's a discussion, at least you've got some people who understand, you know, what you're talking about.
Yeah. And you mentioned it a few times. A lot of people don't realize that they're, student information system has, like you said, has modules that you can purchase or not purchase. You can turn on and off.
Right.
Like we have a module for enrollment. We also have another module for all of our extracurricular activities. Like that's a separate module. That's not something that's just included with.
Right.
With we pay extra for that feature. And if we don't want to use that, if we wanted to use something else, like we could turn that off and do something else, but we would still have our student information system intact, and we could still run those searches that you were talking about.
Right.
So, yeah.
So anyway, that's just like, you know, that was like 2 or 3 days straight of miscommunication, partially on my part for just assuming too much, which I always tell people not to do. And, also, just kind of like seems like 3 or 4 years of no one having any PD with the teachers and just saying, hey, you know, this is how things work. And here's a picture of it. And maybe keep this for your reference in case we need to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I discovered a school in our student information system. I discovered a handful of teachers who had administrative level access to the entire system. And I took it away from them, and they all eventually found their way to the technology office, and they said, yeah, I'm just trying to do this particular search to find students to find out what class they're in, and I don't have that feature. And I was like, okay. And I said, do you need anything else? And they're like, no. And I said, you could change grades for any, and you could destroy classes. You could change grades. You had all this power. Do you need any of that? And they're like, no. And I was like, okay. But when I saw it, they should not have had it. I took it away immediately, and I should have immediately gone and talked to them. That was my bad. That was my fault.
But, yeah. And it's, you know, that's a tough one. It's called roles administration.
Yep. Yeah.
And another good indication that you're using a student information system is that you can give people detailed sets of permission. If you can't do that, either your student information system is really lacking important features, or you're not using a student information system. You're just using something else. So you should be able to say, like, this is a teacher. This is the main, this is an assistant teacher. This is a substitute. This is a parent.
Yeah.
Or you can make your own. Like, this is a systems administrator, but they can only access the elementary school.
And I think it's good to point out for people out there who are considering, they're like, wow, my school needs, we don't have one, or we need to make a change, that these things are usually very expensive. And it is usually a multi-year process to switch from one to another. It's not easy.
Someone at my current school, you know, I just started, and they were like, you know, our contract for this particular system is up next June 2020. So, yeah, we should look around and see what's available. I'm like, we can look around and see what's available, and we can find something else. But you're going to be running that system for at least 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's going to take a minimum of 2 years, maybe longer, to switch to something new. And they were a little surprised. And I'm like, you know, you've been running this for over a decade. Like, you can't just switch all the information over. It's not going to work like that.
Yeah. And it could be when we switched over to our student information system, we didn't really have one. But we've talked with, you know, I've talked with their people there, and they said, well, typically what we do is when you're switching from one to another, you actually have both running, you're paying for both. And you have both running, and you slowly move over from one module at a time.
You're right.
Like, okay, we're going to be focusing on enrollment, and we're going to get enrollment over. Or right. Yeah. So it's tough. It's very tough, and it's never smooth, and it always upsets people because they have to change. And it could do this, but now it can't do that. But oh, I got this new feature, which is nice. I don't know. It's kind of strange.
One thing that I'm seeing though now is, there are more and more companies offering kind of what I would call middleware or a translator. So there's a company called OneRoster, for example. And what they're basically doing is they're allowing you with one older system to connect to like a newer system that might just have one module that you want to use. And they facilitate the core bits of data, and they translate it from like one format to the other, and they pass it back and forth.
Nice.
So for example, Canvas is a very popular LMS.
Yep.
You might want to use it. It's new. It's built on new tech, but maybe you're using something that's kind of old, maybe even server-based, not in the cloud. OneRoster can help you sync your data out to Canvas. So there's more and more of these systems coming up, and I'm just mentioning it because, you know, if you feel like you need to make a big change in workflow, the first thing that you should do is, you know, look at your whole ecosystem and see, in my opinion, where you can make early inroads, early changes that are successful. And maybe like like all this stuff is modular. So what modules can you replace, you know, soon, and what can you replace them with that are going to work, make people feel positive, and like have a good like impact on the community? So you don't have to like throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. You can actually implement a lot of this stuff now, module by module. And you can, like, for example, you can get a student information system that uses a separate company for admissions and registration. If you find an admissions and registration system that you like, your goal then is to say, okay, well, how can we take you know, we kind of like our backend database. It just doesn't have a lot of frills that most of the users like, but the main database administrator is quite happy. So that person might, their workflow might be fine. All the annoyance could really just become coming from one or two modules that a large number of people use, but they're not using it in a deep way. They're just using it for like surface features. There just happens to be a lot of those people, so they complain a lot.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I see this like all the time. People are like, oh yeah, you know, we're going to switch. And I've switched, in terms of like small pieces of software, it has to be dozens by now, like of platforms back and forth. But in China, I switched the school there from an older legacy system into PowerSchool. And that took a full year with a PowerSchool license. It took a full year, and they only had really about 4 or 5 years worth of work under their belt. So I would say if you've been working on a system for 10 years, you might be looking at 1.5 to 2 years. And the longer it goes, like the more history of you have. So some people, when they move to new systems, they're like, we don't care about the historical data. Like there are people who don't, and they're like, we don't care. We want to start fresh.
Yeah,
that's easy. But if you're like, no, we want all of our historical data so we can run analysis on everything that's ever happened at our school. That stuff can be in Excel files. It can be in Access databases. That stuff can be all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so
we changed from, and this was before I got at my school, we stayed with the same company, but we had a server base. Ours was on our own server, and we changed to the cloud, which was a different product that they offered. And even that took a year and a half, from what I understand. You know, same company. Data is just moving from our server up into the cloud, which it was backing up, I think, every day anyway up in the cloud. But now they had a new platform, and yeah, but that was a big change. That was a big change,
Patrick,
for a lot of people.
Working on a change like that sounds like a real hoot.
Oh, are we gonna jump to Kahoot?
Yeah, we should.
All right.
Yeah, we should switch.
All right, let's do it. Kahoot. Oh man, Kahoot. So I got a Kahoot story for you, Tony. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so we are transitioning from iPads to Chromebooks, which is something a lot of schools, I think, are doing. And so our 5th and 6th graders have Chromebooks, and our 7th and 8th graders right now have iPads. And so the 6th grade language arts teacher, she emailed me, and she goes, hey, I need you to install Kahoot on our Chromebooks. Now, our Chromebooks are pretty bare bones. They don't have the Google Play Store. It's not an option. Some Chromebooks you can put the Google Play Store, like from an Android phone, on there and install apps. I didn't want to even bother with that or even look at that. I don't think it's necessary. And so we got these Chromebooks that don't support it. And so I said Kahoot should work fine on any device. It should be okay. And she goes, well, I'm trying to do these Kahoot challenges, and it says you need to install the app. And I said, we can't install that app. It's on the Play Store. We don't have the Play Store for our Chromebooks. And she was not happy. She was she was upset. But Kahoot, come on. What is going on? What? It's a Kahoot challenge, and you can't do it on a computer. You know why? Because Kahoot stinks, Tony. I hate it. I don't like this.
Like it either. I've only used it a couple times. I'm not an expert. But I actually used it as what I would like to call a Kahoot victim. I was required to use it to participate in something. And I had, you know, I have a, like, Galaxy Note 5. I wouldn't say it's an old phone. It's not the Galaxy, it's the Note. And I was on the Wi-Fi, and I added it from the Play Store. And imagine doing a quiz, and somebody's got, like, all the scores up. And, like, the first four questions, which are really easy, you have 0 points. And people are staring at you. And I was sitting there beating my screen with my finger trying to answer. I even pulled out the stylus. I'm like, okay, maybe the stylus will work because it has – the Samsung, you know, has a stylus. And I had to, like, basically force close all the programs, restart the Kahoot app, and, like – the second time I did that, it started working. But by that time, they were like on question 10 of like 16 or 20. So I'd already failed. And I don't know, like, I kind of understand it, but it seems like in order to use it, you really need a mobile device or an iPad.
Yeah, because for the people out there who don't use it, you're good on you. You have a teacher usually runs it, and so the questions are up on a screen, and then everybody who's participating has their own screen, but they don't see the question. They don't see the questions. They just have to choose. I think it's just one of four colors where the answers would be. So they're constantly looking up at the screen and then down at their screen and then up at the back and forth over, and it plays this terrible, terrible music. And I reviewed it in April of 2004. 2004? That can't be right. Hold on. Maybe 2014? 2014. And I didn't like it then. And you know what? It's been 5 years, and I don't think it's really changed much, and I still don't like it. And now I like it even less that it really inconvenienced one of our teachers who was going to, you know, do this as she had made this Kahoot. It was going to be kind of practice for a quiz, and she had to go and do something completely different. And it stunk. It's just, why? Why can't they make that web-based? Why does it have to be an app?
Yeah, I don't know. It is kind of strange. I guess, you know, and if you're a school that, like, bans cell phones, you can't really, and you don't have iPads, you can't really use it at all.
Yeah, yeah. Why would they close out that market? And Chromebooks are becoming more and more and more popular. Not just for students to use, but teachers are getting them. I think businesses are well, we've talked about that Google is going to try to get Chromebooks in enterprise and business. Kahoot. I hope you're listening out there.
I think, you know, there are alternatives like Quizlet, Socrative.
Yep. Quizzes is another one.
Yeah, I was just reading. I've never used Quizzes, but people are saying it's like actually better than Kahoot.
It's much better. Yeah. It's much better.
Down to like another question though too. Like, all right, so you hit a wall. Is Kahoot free?
Yep. Yep.
So you're using something free. You hit a wall, it doesn't support something. It's really not, in my opinion, the place of the school to fix that problem. Like, the school needs to simply just suggest an alternative, and you need to move on. Unless you're using a paid product that has been vetted across your systems, any of these free tools can just stop working or go bad.
Yes. Yeah. You're absolutely right. And they could even, some of these free systems could even be built in Flash, in Adobe Flash, which is totally going away. And that means that website is just not going to work anymore at all.
That's true. Good transition, Patrick.
Thanks.
So I was at like a networking event, and honestly, I have not really dealt with any curriculum since like 2012 or 2013 that was using any like 2D animation or Flash-based animation. All the stuff that I've seen in the last few years has all been like 3D modeling, CAD, and the kids younger and younger are getting into like real animation programs. You know, they're using animation engines, programming in like JavaScript, HTML5, Python has like a gaming engine. So somebody was talking at this event, and I'm like, oh, you know, what are you guys using, whatever, at school? And they're like, oh, we're using Adobe Animate. And I was like, oh, I don't know what Adobe Animate is. I thought I was familiar with all the products. So I looked at it, and it's Flash. I was like, oh. No, it does output it content a lot better than Flash did. Like, you can save it into different formats. But it still uses ActionScript. And so I was just sitting there, and I was thinking, if I have electives for kids to take, they only have a finite amount of time. I want them to be prepared for Man, not just university. It's not just university anymore. There's tons of opportunities now, and companies are being a lot more flexible about finding high school kids with talent and giving them great jobs right out of high school.
Yes. Yeah.
And I can tell you right now, none of those jobs are going to involve flat 2D animation, fake or simulated 3D animation with like flash vectors. And none of them are going to involve ActionScript.
No, no.
So I even did a little bit more research today, and I found nothing online except ActionScript developers literally talking about how some of them have never gotten their careers back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or
now,
yeah.
That's not a definitive amount of research, but I really couldn't find anything positive. Some people were like, ActionScript's a good primer. If you learn it, you can learn other stuff. But I'm like, but you could just learn the other stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need it. I just wanted to mention that if you're looking at programs for your school, you know, you need to be looking at, you should start, like, all kids can learn Tinkercad for free. And then if you want to go higher, they can get 3 years from Autodesk, the professional version, for free if they're students. So, like, you can start with Tinkercad for, like, basic 3D modeling. You can use SketchUp, which is now owned by another company. It's not owned by Google.
Yeah.
You can use SketchUp in the web for free now if you're a school. But the difference between it and the desktop product, huge. And it is a desktop product, okay? This is not a, like, iPad product as far as I know. So you could start with the web version, but you're going to probably, again, if you want to have, like, two levels of things for students to do, SketchUp Pro is amazing. It has a great library. All this animation you can learn to do as well. So, like, after you build the stuff, you can animate the scenes, you know, and it's they're still going to learn those concepts, but they're going to learn them with tools that are a bit more mainstream now. 3D printing, laser cutting, all that stuff, you can build all those models in SketchUp, Tinkercad, Autodesk, and then use those models on all that equipment. So, and then VR and AR are just rapidly expanding.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, you're not going to be interacting and programming for VR systems and AR systems with Flash and Animate. It's not going to happen.
You might. Okay, no, you're not. No, you're not. You're definitely not.
I mean,
going to. No.
Like, we just keep seeing notices from Adobe, right? They're going to stop supporting it.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Flash content doesn't work on mobile devices. Not really.
It doesn't work on any iOS device.
Yeah.
Period.
And I would say on Android it works, but it's not great.
Oh, no.
I know Animate can make HTML5. JavaScript-based stuff. I'm not saying that it's completely useless. I'm just saying that if I have high school students and I have to recommend a curriculum and they only have so many hours to, like, explore topics, I would more than likely give them lynda.com videos or something to learn Animate, and at school get them using tools that connect more to what they're going to run into when they get out of school.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And you know, we don't know, but, you know, what's going to be 10 years down the line. But when you're talking about SketchUp Pro, which is a computer-aided design, that's going to be around. It's still going to be around.
Yeah, they're selling, like, SketchUp Pro, just in case people are interested. I have licensed it now at 2 campuses. I'm looking at doing it. Not this year, but maybe next year for the campus I'm at now. They have an educational license. It is pretty affordable. However, the sales for the educational license are very annoying. You've got to go to their website, and you got to fill out a really long form. You've got to scan an school ID, send it in, let them verify you. And then they're going to connect you to a reseller usually. Some of the resellers won't actually sell the educational product. So sometimes you got to go back and forth with the main company until you can get to a reseller that will actually sell to you. Sometimes, like, you know, when I was in Korea, I literally called them on the phone. And I'm like, this company that you want me to buy from doesn't exist anymore. And I'm like, they don't exist. Call the number. Check. They're not around. In China, they had no reseller, so they let me buy from somebody in California. At first, they were like, no, you can buy from a company in Hong Kong. And so I actually contacted that company, and they're like, I'm sorry, we don't sell to mainland China, and we don't sell the educational pricing. So, but it's not a big deal. You just go back and forth. Once you get the educational pricing locked in, you get a customer number. You can increase your license as you need it, but you can share the license. So, like, if you buy 30 and you run two classes of 15 students every semester, then the next semester you can run two more classes of 15 and rotate the license.
Mm, yeah.
If the students are super keen and they're like, hey, you know, we really want to do this, we love it, they can contact the company on their own, get their own license, or you could then get them an Autodesk license, which will last them for 3 years, and it's not the same product, but it's similar. So I'm just saying that, like, a lot of these CAD companies, they don't have amazing educational sales, and it's just not a big part of their business because they're selling to architects and stuff and actual designers and, you know. So, but they do have the pricing. You shouldn't give up on it. I'm sure Adobe is going to come out with something. You know they're going to. Or they're going to buy somebody.
Yeah. And, in fact, that's how they got Flash. They didn't make Flash. They bought it from a company called Macromedia back in the day. And
like, I can totally see Adobe buying something like SketchUp Pro.
Yeah.
And saying, this is, if you want to make augmented reality or virtual reality, this is how you do it. And if you want to do animation, this is how you do it.
Yeah. And they would just build it all in there. And that's something, all the Adobe products do work very well with each other. Like, if you're using InDesign, it's really easy to bounce into Illustrator or Photoshop and edit something and then put it directly back into InDesign. And so, yeah. That's something that Adobe does really, really, really well. So that's really good.
All right. Well, that's all I have.
That's it. That's all I've got as well. So it's a nice. We're at 37 minutes here, so we're doing pretty good. But that's it. So let's wrap up the show. For IT Babble, I'm Patrick,
and I'm Tony,
and we will catch you on the next episode. Keep on babbling out there.